Welcome to the weekly Front Stretch podcast brought to you by FrontStretch.com. I'm your host, Dustin Albino, and today I'm joined by Zach Catanzaretti and Joseph Wolken, both of whom are here to help me break down the racing this past weekend at Dover International Speedway, which ended the first round of the playoffs. But first, I want to talk to you guys about DraftKings. As the NASCAR world is in the midst of its playoff stretch, there are plenty of opportunities to jump in on the action with DraftKings. On DraftKings, the objective is simple. Pick six drivers, watch how they perform on Sunday, and if you choose correctly, you can be eligible for massive cash prizes. All you have to do to jump in on the action is sign up through the Front Stretch Podcast article page, make a $5 deposit, and you can be eligible for a free entry into one of this weekend's contests at Charlotte Motor Speedway. Once again, DraftKings, where you choose, you play, and you win. Now guys, this past weekend at Dover International Speedway, Kyle Busch went back-to-back for the first time this season, but the bigger story may have been how Chase Elliott lost the race. Guys, Chase Elliott led over 130 laps. How heartbreaking is this for a 21-year-old? He's younger than us to lose this victory. Coming to the white flag. Joe.
I think by far this was his best chance at getting into victory lane. He's run really well at different tracks, obviously, but this was by far the best he's ever run, and he just should have moved to the high line, Dustin. We were speaking about it earlier. I really don't know why he didn't move out of the way.
Yeah, to me, this doesn't seem like one of those hindsight 2020 deals. I mean, it seemed pretty apparent. I mean, why didn't he move up? I don't know. I mean, he had Eddie DeHunt screaming in his ear. Again, the 18's using the outside lane. He just got around the 78. He's in the second. He's closing fast. And he didn't respond. He didn't react. He just stayed on the inside. So I said the same thing about Eric Jones at Bristol. I mean, you have to block. I mean, that move that Chase did on the backstretch with two to go, he literally moved down the racetrack and gave Kyle the lane to get him into turn three. I mean, usually it's not so straightforward where you look at it and you're like, whoa, he made it pretty easy on him. But for this one, I just sat there pinching the bridge of my nose going, Chase, what are you doing?
Yeah, so I was at Dover, and you could tell how much this one stung. And part of you feels sorry for Chase. But in all reality, he gave up a four-second lead over the past 20 laps. So, And Kyle Busch, in his post-race media availability, he kind of mimicked what you guys said. And when he was asked if Chase could have done anything differently, he said, and I quote, "The only thing Chase could have done differently was just move around and try to get out of the wake of the cars that were in front of him. I was actually surprised he didn't." And then he went on and on. But guys, I mean, Chase was in the wake of the cars, but he was like a half second behind Ryan Newman. And we all know Ryan Newman, as I think Kyle Petty put it on the post-race broadcast, His he'll make the track as wide as his neck. So
that's pretty wide.
So,
well, Brad Doherty used to say that Ryan Newman's harder to pass than a kidney stone.
For sure. And that may be so. But I mean, was he just intimidated by Newman's presence and not getting by because he knows how hard he was? I don't know, but I don't know. It's just another missed opportunity for Chase and the 24 team. So my question to you, Zach, is how surprised are you? Because Chase has now made 70 career starts in the Cup Series, and yet he doesn't have a victory. Are you surprised?
Yeah, I'm shocked, really. I mean, how he was performing in his rookie season, I thought he was going to win last year, and it just didn't happen. He came close. He had some dominating runs, and this year he seemed to be kind of he was pretty much off the radar for a little bit. A lot of people were looking at Larson and looking at Eric Jones for a little bit, and Chase was kind of a little behind, and now he seems to be ramping it up. So, yeah, I mean, as Joe said, that was definitely by far his best shot at winning a race. He had that thing won, and he just, as Kyle said post-race, it was just inexperience that bit him there. And we're going to talk about Newman a little bit later with Gordon and why they were upset, but, I mean, I really don't see any fault on Newman. I don't see how Chase lost that race. I mean, it was just in his pocket, and he just let it slip away again.
Well, here's the thing, Zach, and you nailed it on the head. Basically, look at Chase Elliott's stats from this year and last year. They're almost equivalent. I mean, within the next two or three races, he's going to have more top tens, and he's going to have more top fives. And on top of that, he has already led more laps than he did. Well, here. But the thing is, he has the speed. He's not showing it when he needs to, and he's not showing patience at the end of the races. And he's also not showing the knowledge that he has that he showed in the Xfinity Series to get into victory lane, and that's a problem.
Yeah, he led 138 laps on Sunday, and they all came in the last stage. I'm I'm still shocked at how he lost that race. And I'm just like you, Zach. It takes a lot for me to be shocked. But the fact that he hasn't won 70 races in and how close he's been, he's got 5 runner-up finishes now. I'm really, really surprised he doesn't have a victory. But with that, Kyle Busch did pick up his 4th victory of the season on Sunday, and it's his 4th win in the last 9 races, and he's kind of flown under the radar, I think, in those 9 races. Guys, I know we talk about Truex, and I've asked you this question probably the last 2 or 3 weeks on the podcast, but is Kyle Busch now the favorite for the title? He just keeps chugging along and leading laps and now winning.
I'm still sticking with Denny Hamlin. I'll tell you why. Okay, Denny Hamlin had a bad run, and obviously at Dover. But the thing is, he has that consistency. I think, obviously, Kyle Busch is absolutely outstanding the last few races. Like you said, those 2 wins in a row were absolutely fantastic. And he did so in an unbelievable fashion, including Dover, where he just came on as of late at the end of the race. He was over 5 seconds back at the end of that race, which is absolutely outstanding. I think you'd have to be stupid at this point not to say Kyle Busch is the favorite.
Yeah, when we did the playoff picks, my championship picks doing pretty well, and that is Kyle Busch. Okay. And I picked him mostly with my gut telling me to, because at the time it looked like Truex was the favorite, but now Kyle seems to be coming to the plate a little bit better than Truex. So I know for Sunday, I absolutely expected that to be another Truex train type of race, just everybody behind him, and he was gonna own it, but he ended up falling back a little bit. Even Kyle fell back early, but he was able to come back. So I think with Kyle, he's a tremendous qualifier, so he has that raw speed right out of the gate, and he has that best pit pick. He's got the track position right away, and he's able to hang on to it, and there hasn't been as many mistakes as there has been in the past with him. So it seems to be running pretty darn perfect for him.
Yeah, I thought Truex was going to – I mean, I picked Truex to win on Sunday. But like you said, Zach, Kyle Busch does have that raw speed. He's got 8 poles this year, career high, and he started 2nd on Sunday, though he did fall back right at the beginning. And then he got kind of lucky at the end of the first stage when Jeff Earnhardt went for a little spin into the sand barrels. And he ended up finishing 2nd in the first stage. But he led 30 laps on the afternoon. Kyle's going to be tough to beat. I don't see – unless bad luck strikes him like this round, but he's got such a points advantage now. Even like we think Truex is a lock, but Kyle Busch got to be getting pretty darn close. I mean, he's like,
yeah, on top of that, also you have to remember Kyle Busch doesn't have that bad luck that Martin Truex Jr. has had over the past few years. Well, not the past few years, but the past few races rather. And you can look at Chicago as kind of the bad race for Kyle Busch. The fact that he got that out right away is going to be a really big thing, I think, for him moving forward.
I mean, Chicago was a bad race for him, I guess, in terms of bad races, but he was the fastest car there all weekend. He just got a pit road penalty, 2 pit road penalties that kind of put him in the back.
Yeah, and those mistakes, though, will cost you championship. I mean, we've seen Truex make a bunch of those mistakes this year, and I really think that when it comes down to having a perfect race, and that's what Homestead really is, these two are basically all but guaranteed to Homestead. I really think that when it comes down to that, between the two of them itself, Kyle Busch won't have a mistake, and Martin Truex Jr. will. And Homestead's also, as we've spoken about in previous podcasts, that's not Martin Truex Jr.'s best track.
Yeah, I mean, for Kyle to miss the playoffs, I think it would have to be this next round, because you got Talladega, you got Charlotte, which he's never won at, and Kansas, which historically has been his worst track. In the last round, in the 3rd round of the playoffs, you got, Martinsville, where he had over 200 laps in the spring, should have won, finished 2nd. You got Texas, where he's won a bunch of times, and then Phoenix, where he led the most laps again in the spring. So, yeah, I see Kyle Busch as a lock to Homestead. But what is not a lock, and what wasn't a lock going into Sunday, was that 12th playoff position. Going into the race, Stenhouse, Ricky Stenhouse Jr., and Austin Dillon were tied, with Ryan Newman 1 point back. Now, guys, that was a pretty good battle throughout the race. But at the end of the race, Newman missed it by a pair of points. Dillon missed it by less than 5. Kurt Busch and Casey Kane are all out. So out of those, do you guys think that the best 12 drivers are still left fighting for that championship?
That's a good question. That's definitely a good way to word it. When it comes to surprises, Kurt Busch was I guess I would say big surprise. I mean, he wasn't, you know, part of my final 4, but I definitely saw him making it to the final 8. Like, if he was able to continue how he ended the regular season and bring it in, But it just, it was like a gate. I mean, it just ended right when Chicago started, that speed ended, and he's out. He's done. I mean, they just didn't show anything at all this three-race playoffs. And, you know, he said there was a lot of bad luck, but I just didn't see much speed there either. Loudon definitely hurt with that wreck. But with Stenhouse, that was a big surprise to me. Saw a direct effect from the stage racing. I mean, he got lucky with that caution there with Jeffrey. He's able to get, I believe, 7 playoff points, finish third or fourth in the stage, and that ended up making the difference. If he didn't get that, he would have missed it. So, I mean, that was pretty wild to see, and I definitely feel having Talladega in this round, you know, Stenhouse could be a huge spoiler to make it into the round of 8.
Oh, I agree with you, Zach, completely. I'm still unbelievably shocked that Ricky Stenhouse Jr. made it into this next round. And the fact that he has those 2 wins, he's seated 8th in the playoffs right now, entering this next round, compared to Jamie McMurray, who's had an unbelievably consistent season, running in the top 10 week in and week out. Jamie McMurray is starting this next round 56 points behind Martin Truex Jr. But keep in mind, that's only 7 points behind Stenhouse. That's a decent amount. Those 7 points is what Ricky Stenhouse made up in one stage. Keeping that in mind, and in terms of surprises, though, back to Dustin's question, I'm still shocked that Kurt Busch wasn't able to put together a full, complete, good race at Dover. And also the whole thing of Ryan Newman. Ryan Newman should have run better at Dover. His team knew he had to, and it's basically down to that. He didn't run as well as he needed to.
Yeah, I'm really surprised about Kurt Busch. Like you, Zach, I had him in my final 8. I almost put him in the final 4. It was between him and Denny Hamlin, and I went with Hamlin. So yeah, I'm really, really surprised that Kurt he had 3 top 5s going into the playoffs, and then that speed was gone. And he made a couple errors as a driver as well. But yeah, him and Newman, Ryan Newman, I was surprised. I had him going to the next round as well. I had Blaney and Stenhouse missing it. And I was wrong, but yeah, so I guess Stenhouse, I mean, this could be a Stenhouse round with Talladega looming, and he won Daytona and Talladega, so I guess we'll have to see how that goes. But guys, I want to talk about the whole Ryan Newman and Jeff Gordon thing now in Pit Road. I was right there for it, and I was listening to everything they were saying, and essentially Gordon was pissed off because he blamed Newman for costing Chase the win, and we know Gordon, how he's aligned with Hendrick Motorsports and listed as the car owner of the 24 car. Now, if you watch the NBC Sports replay, you'll see me right there. So I thought we were going to have a WWE match. I thought we were going to have a throwdown because Newman was pissed. But he took Gordon's comments the wrong way. He claimed that the 4-time champion is being a smartass, telling him to watch what he says. Guys, you think it's Zach, I'll start with you. Fair or foul that Gordon should have approached Newman after the event, after racing 400 miles at the Monster Mile?
Hey, I mean, I'm not going to sit here and say that I'd never put feelings before facts before. Jeff, he desperately wants to see that 24 win the race. And obviously, when you make that type of comment, I see it through Newman's eyes, and I definitely see how he would get frustrated. And as I said, I understand the distaste from Jeff. I mean, I think he quickly realized he was sort of in the wrong because there is more than one race going on out there. Chase had that race, was racing for the win, but especially in a cutoff race, I mean, Newman had so much on the line. He had to stay on the lead lap. And as I said, Newman really wasn't slowing Chase down a whole lot. It's not like he was right on his bumper and he was blocking and pulling all these moves. It was not outlandish. So there's just not much to look at there. So I think it was just one of those classic case of emotions over sense. And sometimes there's nothing really wrong with that, just something that happens post-race here every now and then.
Yeah, I agree with you completely. I mean, look at the common sense here. Chase Elliott had the option to move up and block Kyle Busch on that last lap. He didn't. He had the choice. Do I stick to the low side, which I've been running for the last 130 or so laps, or am I going to just actually try something new and try to block Kyle Busch and try to stop him? When Kyle Busch went around him, he didn't even try, it looked like. He just flew right by. You can't blame Ryan Newman for that.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, Chase probably could have, because Kyle was still coming so quickly. He was coming 3 to 4 tenths a lap for a while. Chase should have tried something like 10 to go. So he didn't be in the position where it's kind of a, you know, a damned if you do, damned if you don't move on the last lap where he had to block Kyle, and that being the only time he went to the top. But yeah, the whole Newman thing and Gordon thing, it just, I don't know. Being there in person, I was like, wow, I really think we're going to have a throwdown. And then when you see that we weren't and they're just talking, and then our colleague that writes for IndyCar at frontstretch.com, John Haverland, his tweet went viral of the video of him, Gordon putting his arm around Newman. NBC Sports used it. So it looks like they did indeed make up. But guys, my next question, and I'm going to kind of throw this, I don't even know how to word it. But with Gordon broadcasting for Fox Sports, and Zach, I'll start with you again, but also being listed as the 24 car owner, I don't know how to put this. Does he even have a reason to be upset? I mean, sure, he's the car owner, but then he's being biased. And clearly he's going to be, and Brad Keselowski called him out last year for that. So I don't even know if that's a question, but Zach, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I definitely thought about that a little bit. It's been a topic on the table ever since he joined Fox last year. And like we see him during the broadcast, I know the Daytona 500 this year was a bit of an issue. When Chase ran out of fuel, you heard Jeff, he's like, oh, no, oh. And, you know, Dale kind of, you know Dale, he's emotional. So when someone gets upset, he gets upset too. He's like, oh, no, Chase is out. And, you know, all the while, Austin runs out of fuel and Cook gets the lead, and they don't really pay attention to that. But, yeah, when it comes to Jeff, yeah, it is hard because, as you said, he has a strong connection to that team, and I feel like he always will, whether it's the car number or Rick Hendrick himself. And, yeah, when it comes to that, I think when he's in the booth, it's different than when he's just on pit road here and on the pit box. It is something that I try, especially in journalism, you try to separate one from the other. I know with Jeff, it's tough. So I see both sides, but I definitely respect when they're able to separate those two worlds.
Well, here's the thing. You're looking at this as if Jeff Gordon's a journalist. He's not a journalist. Same thing with Darrell Waltrip. Same thing with Ned Jarrett. Same former athletes into the broadcast booth is that not only do they make it personal, they make it emotional. And when you see someone like Jeff Gordon doing something like that, it adds to the broadcast. It adds that extra personal aspect. And that's what his job is. And you're going to see Dale Jr. do it next year for all the Hendrick guys. You see Jeff Gordon do it. You see even Darrell Waltrip does it. Whenever he sees someone, Michael Waltrip does it. Whenever a Toyota driver is running well, you know? It's kind of part of the game.
Yeah, I see that view. But then you look at a guy like a Jeff Burton, for instance. And sure, he ran a lot of years with Roush and then a lot of years with Childress. And I think he does a hell of a job in the booth.
He definitely does the best out of all of them. And definitely the best, because he does know how to separate himself and still be personal. But at the same time, for the rest of these guys, it's very clear they don't know what to do in that sense, where they want to have the personal aspect in it, where they're not trying to disconnect like Jeff Burton is.
Yeah, I agree with you. It's hard because Gordon has had, I mean, he ran his whole year or his whole career in that 24 car. So for him to even get out and then straight into the booth, I mean, I think it's kind of hard to even ask him to be fair. I mean, that is what you're asked to be as a journalist. But like you said, Joe, he ain't a journalist. I mean, he's a former race car driver.
And I definitely love to see emotion. And as you said, he was in that car number his entire career. Chase had, you know, he's had such a strong tie with that team. And it's been such a huge success, I feel, having an Elliott name in that car. So I definitely love emotion. I'm definitely not against it. But to me, there's certain lines that I don't like to see crossed. I'm not saying Jeff has crossed any of those lines yet, or if I've seen anybody else do that, but it's just something that I like keeping my eyes on a little bit.
Yeah, and don't get me wrong. I might be hard on Gordon right there, but I love Gordon in the booth. I think he's great. He's brought a ton to Fox Sports, I think. I personally like him being in the booth, but yeah, I don't know. I'm kind of up in the air about him and the whole 24 thing, but obviously, and if it came out this week that he may not even renew after next year, so I think that'll be another thing. Because I forget, did you guys see that article? It was the SBJ article. Joe, did you see it?
No.
Okay, well, essentially Adam Stern, who works for Sports Business Journal, talked to Gordon about his future, and after 2018 next year, he might not re-sign, and because of commitments at Hendrick. So I guess we'll have to see how that plays out going into 2019. But he'll be in the booth next year. And like I said, I think he does a tremendous job. But I don't know, going forward, Jeff, lay off that 24 car a little bit. And next year it's going to be William Byron. So
that's going to be a different aspect. He doesn't have that emotional connection he had to Chase Elliott.
Right.
I still think you're going to see the Jeff Gordon bias toward Chase Elliott. Not as much as William Byron.
But he owns that 24 car.
That is true. He does own the car.
Oh, that's not good.
Bonding his bias a little bit.
Double trouble.
Well, I mean, let's be real. He drove for Hendrick Motorsports. He owes a lot to Rick Hendrick. Rick Hendrick is very grateful for him. He really put Hendrick Motorsports on the map at the beginning. So, I mean, he's going to be biased for that whole organization. Let's be real. I mean,
yeah.
You can't help it. Whatever, you know. But moving on, let's talk some Xfinity and Truck Series. Ryan Blaney dominated the Xfinity race this past weekend, leading 136 of the 200 laps. And really, once he got on the lead after the first stage, he ran away with the race. But guys, Ben Rhodes, what a hell of a Camping World Truck Series race. Him and Christopher Ball had a really good, you know, finish last couple laps. Zach, I know you wanted to speak upon this. What were your thoughts on that race?
I was just really proud of Ben. You know, he's just one of those guys. We talked about Chase, you know, all he's surprised he's gone this long without a win. I've been surprised that Ben's gone pretty much, he went all last season and all throughout this year without a win. And, you know, he was finally able to get it done, and it was just such a great race with him and Chris down to the end. You know, pulled some blocks. He was able to get aggressive, and which is not what we saw from Chase. So it got Ben a win, and at this point in the season, I expect him to be really strong in the mile and a half. So coming into this race, I had him as an expected winner, and he got it done. So it's big for his career. I spoke to him way back at Daytona. He said that this is his chance to make a career in NASCAR. He's getting a second shot here with Thor Sport, and he desperately wanted to win, and he knows how big it was for him, and he finally got it done. So it was just a feel-good night over there on the West Coast.
Yeah,
and this, like you said, this is the biggest win for him. I mean, okay, he had a bunch of K&N Pro Series wins, and he won the championship there. This really proves he can win in NASCAR. This could be something where, okay, he rushed to the Xfinity Series, and he ran very poorly in JR Motorsports Equipment, making him look really bad. But how is he going to do now that he got his first win under his belt? I think more wins are coming for Ben Rhodes.
I do, too, because if you look at his career, or his year, like Zach said, he's been really good in the mile and a half this year, and he should have won Kansas. He should have won a couple races. He passed Kyle Busch at Kansas, so everyone thought that was going to be his first win until he blew up with 8 laps to go. But yeah, I was surprised it took so long for him to get this win. But, you know, I'm really happy for him. He's into the next round of the playoffs now. So who knows what's going to happen. What do we got in the next round of the playoffs? We got Texas a mile and a half track. We got Martinsville. And what do we got? Phoenix. So who knows? Maybe he'll make it to Homestead. He's only got to beat 2 other cars now, or 2 other trucks. So we'll have to see. But with moving on to the Xfinity Series a little bit, Daniel Hemric, NASCAR kind of dropped the hammer on him and Danny Stockman, his crew chief this week, as well as their car chief and lead engineer, for a piece of it looked like lead tungsten that flew out of the car during practice down pit road. They're also suspended for 4 races, which is through Phoenix, which means Hemric, who's in a pretty, I mean, he's going to make it to the next round. And then I had him in my final 4, so that would mean that they're not going to realign until Homestead. How big of a factor, Joe, is not having Danny Stockman, who's a veteran of the sport, going to be on Hemric going to Homestead?
This is absolutely massive. I mean, Daniel Hemric currently sits 5th in the standings. He's having a solid year for someone who never had any Xfinity Series practice before this year. I mean, 6 top 5s, 14 top 10s. You really can see the improvement coming from Daniel Hemric. I really feel like this just absolutely killed any shot at the title for him. Absolutely killed it. And it's a shame, but I really think if he comes back next year for RCR, that kid's going to be a title contender.
Yeah, I definitely feel pretty, you know, similar feelings there, because he's been right on the cusp. He's not someone who's out there winning races. He's not leading a whole lot of laps. He's kind of just hanging in there in the top 5 or 10, which is good for a rookie year, but When you get hit down like this, that's just something that you really don't need. So, and you know, when it comes to the penalty, when it comes to something like that, I mean, that can get really dangerous. We saw with Jamie Dick years ago during practice, he had a piece of lead come through his car and hit him in the helmet. So, I mean, you got to take something like that seriously. And unfortunately for Daniel, that's none of his fault at all. That's just something that the crew did. So, yeah, it could be a detrimental hit in his season, which is a shame because, as Joe said, he's been doing very well this year.
But then you could look at it the other way, too. I mean, sure, he and Stockman have ran well together, and they've got experience now. They've been, 28 races together. But have they announced I don't think they've even announced the new crew chief, but who knows? I mean, maybe they hit it off this weekend at Charlotte and, you know, make a run. Personally, like I said, I had him in my final four, and I still think it'll be between him and Cole Custer for that last spot because I think the three JRM cars, in my opinion, are a lock unless they, you know, break down in the next round. But, yeah, I mean, this definitely affects his chances of making it to Homestead, but I don't think it's as big as you guys are trying to make it out to be.
I mean, it might not be. It really might not be. I mean, let's face it. Danny Stockman is still going to be very involved in the team. He's going to be texting back and forth mid-race. I don't think it'll be that much of an effect. But when it comes to those mid-race strategy calls and those last-minute calls, he's not going to be – whoever replaces him can't text Danny Stockman last second, yo, what's going on? Help me out. What do I do? What do I do? What do I do? That's going to be where it comes down to Daniel Hemric's knowledge more than anything. And that could really hurt him.
Yep,
I agree. And we've seen drivers win with new crew chiefs before. Like, their crew chief gets suspended, and they end up winning that week. So sometimes it's not that big of an effect. We'll see how it affects this 21 team.
Yeah, that happens actually, you know, very often.
It does, yeah.
Now, guys, briefly, do you guys want to hit on the new cup rule change for next year? There's not much of a different, you know, change.
Yeah, there was some significant changes. I would like to talk about it, but yeah, I was hoping to see some more significant stuff, you know, when it comes to downforce and stuff like that. All the drivers always talking about how they want to tinker with the splitters and the side skirts, and it just didn't really seem to get off the ground for next year. So some disappointment there, but as we see, sometimes it's just small changes that affects the series over time.
I don't have much to say other than I'm unbelievably disappointed. Then NASCAR cannot figure out by now that the clean air advantage is ruining everything, and they don't understand. It's just ridiculous.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous to me.
There is a few passes for Lou to Dover, but between Chicago and New Hampshire, I think there was one under the green flag condition. I think maybe one or two.
It's ridiculous. It's ridiculous. And last year's racing, frankly, was so much better in the Cup Series. Which is a shame, because in the Xfinity and the Truck Series, you're seeing better racing.
Now, guys, speaking of clean air, we're going to Charlotte Motor Speedway, which is a mile and a half track. You like the little segue there? clean air is going to be a big advantage this week, but the past two races at Charlotte have gotten rained out during the playoffs, and they've had, you know, pretty incredible Sunday afternoon races. So, with that, we'll start with the Xfinity Series on Saturday. Who are your guys' pick for the Xfinity Series race?
Yeah, I made a pact that I'm not going to be picking Hemric anymore, so I got him off my list.
We got Ryan Blaney, Eric Jones, Daniel Suarez, Ty Dillon, and Austin Dillon out of the Cup drivers in there.
Yeah, I'm actually going to look past all those guys and pick Custer, I would say.
That's a good pick. He's hitting his stride.
He is, absolutely, and I expect him to be a little bit better at Dover since he got a top five there last time, but when we're looking at mile and a half, Chicago, I don't think I'm still not over how good he was that day, so I feel like he would be a pretty confident pick for me for this weekend.
I'm going with William Byron. He's been a little cold lately. I think he's going to heat up this weekend.
I'm glad you guys didn't steal my pick, and I think you're kind of forgetting about this guy, but he's making his only second NASCAR start of the year this weekend, Alex Bowman. He's driving the 42 for Chip Ganassi. They won the last mile and a half race with Tyler Reddick at Kentucky, and sure, that was a standalone race, but I think Alex Bowman's experience is going to get it done. Now, Joe, Cup Series, who you got?
Jimmy Johnson has not run as well as he would have liked during this year. Jimmy Johnson will go back to victory lane on Sunday.
Zach? Okay, yeah, we'll get back to Zach in a second, but I don't know. Who should I go with? You got Jamie McMurray that runs well there if you want to go on a limb. Kozlowski's won there in the past. Thrown out of my head, I'll go Truex. Why not? I'll be boring, and I'll go with Truex.
Why not? He might actually dominate and lead a little bit like 5 miles again.
Like the 600 last year.
That's ridiculous.
Now we're having some technical difficulties with Zach. we do these over Skype, and currently right now Zach is frozen. So maybe we'll get back or we'll tweet out who Zach's going to pick for this weekend. But until next week, I mean, that's all we got. Joe, you got any last minute words?
Oh, enjoy the races in Charlotte, folks, and I hope you guys have a great week.
Yeah, and make sure to follow. I know Zach's going to be at the track this weekend for frontstretch.com, and I don't know if we got anyone else. Probably Amy Henderson.
Mike Neff
will be there. Good old Mike Neff, former podcaster with us the last month. But yeah, until next week, until we start previewing Talladega, which should be an epic race, we'll see you then.